My name is Laurel Waschuk, and I am interviewing William Waschuk in his winter vacation home in Palm Springs, California. The date is January 6th, 2018. What's your full name?
My name is William W. Waschuk. The W is silent. There is no name to it.
And what's your father's name?
My father's name was Jacob.
What was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Violet.
What was her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Sawchuk.
What was your father's date of birth?
He was born in 1887.
And what was your mother's date of birth?
She was born in 1889.
Do you know their place of birth?
The place of birth was a place called Dayton, and it was a Russian empire at that time.
Okay. Do you know what country it's in now?
It's Poland.
Can you tell us a little bit about your parents?
My parents came to Canada in 1929 and settled on a farm about 22 miles north of Athabasca, a district called Larvart. And that's where I grew up, on a farm.
Can you tell us what type of work your father did?
My father was a farmer, and to make ends meet, especially in the fall during harvest time, he would get a job stooking. In those days, there was no combine, so everything was cut with a binder, and he would have to stook the bundles so they would dry during harvest time. And then, of course, they used threshing machines instead of combines those days, and that was his job, to work at harvest time to make ends meet.
So he worked for other farmers?
He worked for other farmers, mostly in the St. Albert, the Clyde area.
Do you have some early memories of your childhood?
Yes, I do. I started school when I was 6 years old, and myself and neighbor's boy, also 6 years old, we had to stay after a few days in school, and the reason was the teacher called us in to after school and said, "You showed your tackies to the girls, didn't you?" We said, "Yeah, yes, we did." So he strapped the boy, but he started to cry, and so loud, so he did not strap me.
So can you describe your school and your teacher?
Yes, our school consisted probably approximately between 30 and 40 students. The teacher had a little house by the school, a teachery. It was called a teachery house. That's where she lived, and she was from somewhere around Athabasca, but she lived in this teachery. And the teacher at that time was a very nice teacher. As we got older, we started to get a little bit naughty. So there were Saturday dances in school. A lot of neighbors would bring cases of beer and to have a party in school. And Monday morning, I found a bottle of beer. And, of course, I brought it into school, and the teacher said, "Give me that." And I wouldn't give it to her. And she kept saying, "You give me that." I said, "No," and I jumped out the window. And she chased me around the school several times. And I jumped back into school. And she came into back in school inside, and she was laughing. She did not punish me. And, of course, after school, I shared this bottle of beer with my friends.
How did you get to school?
We walked 3 miles each way, every day, 5 days a week, of course. 3 miles to school and 3 miles back, which was for 8 years I've walked to school.
How long did you go to school for?
I only finished grade 8. When I was 6, 7 years old, I used to solder pots and pans for my mother, and I was pretty good at it. And as I got older, I quit school, took a welding course in Edmonton.
And how did you find out about the welding course?
I was 16 years old, and the welding course in Edmonton. It was called Chicago Vocational Training, and I was trained there for 6 weeks.
Do you remember how much the course was, and do you remember anything about your instructor? How did you pay for that course?
The course was $225, but on the farm, I applied. There was an ad in a newspaper, and I applied for this course. And the man from Edmonton came down to interview me. But we had to put $50 down. And of course, my father didn't have the $50, so he borrowed it from my neighbor. And the man from Edmonton said, "When you finish your course, we'll get you a job. And the balance would be paid when I arrive in Edmonton to take the course." So, when I arrived in Edmonton, he said, "You got to pay the money in advance before you can continue." Well, I said, "I have no way of getting in touch with my father because we have no phone, and a letter would take some time." So he said, "Okay, you can continue." And I finally got in touch with my father with a letter, which would be a week, 10 days later. And he sent the money, and I continued to finish the course. But when I finished the course, I had no money. Well, first of all, I worked in a bowling alley in the evenings for 4 cents a game, and I would make up to $2 a night. So I made a few dollars there, and when the course was finished, I was short $15 to pay for my room and board. And the owner of the apartment said, "Well, you cannot take your suitcase until you pay us." So I went to my inspector. He was a good old fella, and he borrowed me the $15 to pay for the for my room. And when I arrived back at home, we sent the $15 to him. He was a gentleman.
What did you do in the bowling alley?
I set up pins for 4 cents a game. In those days, you had to set pins by hand. And I worked on two alleys. I'd jump over into the other alley and 2-3 hours in the evening for probably a couple of weeks.
And where did you room and board? Can you describe that?
In a rooming house just off Jasper Avenue. I walked to school. Oh, I think it was about 20 blocks every day.
Do you have a story about the first time you saw, I believe it was the trolley in Edmonton, the first time you saw heard the trolley?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, this wasn't my first time in Edmonton, but it's the first time I was alone. So I'm walking the first day to school, which would be about 20 blocks on the sidewalks on 124th Street, Jasper Avenue. And, of course, I see this train overhead, and cars are going underpass. It was an underpass. Walk in, and I hit this steel post and almost knocked myself out because I was walking backwards watching this train go. But I was okay. I got up and continued walking, and I got into school on time, and everything was fine.
What did you do in the evening when you were in Edmonton?
I would go to a show practically every evening. This theater was called Gem. Most of the shows were Tarzan. And every evening, probably not every evening, but three or four times a week, that's when I watched, mostly Tarzan.
Do you remember how much the shows were to get, what was the admission fee?
I think it was 15 cents.
Did you have the possibility to buy food in the cinemas?
There probably was, but I didn't because I didn't have much money with me ever when I was in Edmonton. Just had enough money to live on, and that's why I had to work in the bowling alley to make my expenses. So this one time, I had a buddy staying with me in this rooming house. He was also taking a welding course, and he was from the North Spirit River, I believe. So we decided to go bowling, but he bought a case of beer. And I'm 16 years old, and he was 18. And, of course, we drank quite a bit and decided to go bowling. But it was very muddy. It was very warm that day. And we walked into the bowling alley, never took our shoes off. Well, I'll tell you, they threw us out.
Do you have any other stories you'd like to share of your experience when you were taking the welding course?
Well, we bunked together, and we used the one bed. But he scratched all night. For some reason, he scratched and never thought nothing of it. And when I finished the score, got back home, I started to scratch. And I scratched and scratched, and I think I picked up eczema from him. But after about a month or so, I cured myself. So I was fine.
When you had your little welding business on the farm, did you have a shop?
Yes, I built a shop. And my father bought me the equipment. First of all, was oxyacetylene welding. And later on, got me an electric welder. And working for the farmers, I guess they couldn't pay me. Some of them would be on credit. I finally went bankrupt. I couldn't even pay for my oxygen bottle. The oxygen bottle was $4 then. Today, it's about $80. So I had to quit, start looking for a job.
What kinds of work did you do for the farmers?
It would be, they broke a spoke in a wheel. It would be on equipment, major equipment. When I first got my ticket, it was called a special, and all I could do is weld for the farmers. I could not weld anything of importance. For an example, an axle on a truck or anything like that. My special was not meant for that. So as time went on, it took me 4 years to get my first class journeyman. And that first class journeyman is for life. But as time went on, when I got my first class journeyman, a year later, I applied for a B pressure certificate. And that pressure certificate is only good for 18 months. So every 18 months, you have to get a new one. And that is for welding up hand on boilers, mainly on boilers.
Did you weld, when you welded for the farmers, did you weld chains?
I welded chains, and this one farmer paid me 10 cents a link. So I think I welded 10 links for him because he had a bunch of chains that were broken. I pieced them together, and I made $1.
And you were how old when you built the shop, and what was the shop like?
I was 17 when I built the shop. The shop was not very big, but it was I had my welding equipment in there. It was okay for the business that I had.
And this shop is where?
The shop was on my father's farm, just where I was born and raised.
Do you have a story about when you were a young boy and you built a little motorcycle?
Yes. Well, this was after I came back from my welding course, and I got a job in Baptist Lake. There was a shop. A family came in from Edmonton and opened a shop, and I pedaled a bike every day, well, 5-6 days a week, 11 miles each way. So I got tired of pedaling a bike. I decided to do something about it. So I bought a washing machine motor for $15 and fastened it to the bike, and it worked excellent. But before I did this, I took it for a trial run to Athabasca, which is 22 miles, and pulled into a service station, and it seemed like all of the town surrounded me when they saw this contraption. So I bought some gas. It took 8 cents worth of gas to get to Athabasca, and of course the gas at that time was 34 cents a gallon. So I bought an ice cream cone and headed back home.
So did you use this homemade motorcycle every day to go to work for a long time?
Yes, I used it for 3 months till I finally had an accident. The column in the steering wheel broke, and I was slightly injured, had a wreck, and that was the end of it. I did not repair it. I just retired the bicycle, and that was it.
So after you got your welding course, how long did it take you to get your welding ticket?
It took 4 years, but the first year I got a ticket called special, and I could only weld on farm equipment, nothing too serious. You could not weld on axles because this special ticket did not cover it. So then 3 more years, I got my journeyman. I worked in shops for 3 years, and then when I was 20 years old, my father retired, and I went to Stettler, and I got a job. I had a welding rig at the time, and I got a job in Stettler, and I went into the oil fields and started welding pipelines. And I worked for this welding contractor for 3 years. Then I went on my own, still continuing on the pipelines, till I was till 1960. Then I went welding big inch, up to 48 inch, and I was pretty good at it. And 1965, I hurt my knee, and I had to have an operation. I had a torn cartilage, so I was on crutches for a month. And then I thought, well, after welding 15 years on the pipelines, I decided to branch out on my own. So I bought a ditching machine for $1,500, a backhoe for $3,000, and a few other things that was necessary to get going, and borrowed $10,000 from the Royal Bank of Canada. I couldn't get more, and we saved about $4,000. Then I started pipelining. I got my first job, 4,000 feet of 4-inch. I didn't do too well, but I did okay, and continued. Every time I got a job, it was a little bigger, little bigger, and we kept going. I was doing quite well. As time went on, we became major pipeline construction company, one of the largest privately owned construction companies in Canada. And we were very successful in this situation. And today, the company is 50 years old, and it's still going. And I am semi-retired for the time being.
When you were young and started to become interested in women or meeting a young girl, where would you meet a young girl? Where did couples meet? How did you meet young girls?
Well, I met a lot of girls when I left Athabasca. I was 20 years old, and of course, I met my wife. She's my wife today, Agnes, in Trochu. I was 23, and she was 16. So in about 3, 4, 5 months later, she came to Stettler and got a job with a telephone company. And that's when we started dating, and eventually we got married.
What was Agnes's maiden name?
Her maiden name was Agnes Pastowski.
And what year did you get married?
We got married in 1956.
And what anniversary did you celebrate? What anniversary would you celebrate this year?
We will be celebrating 62 years.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Would you like to talk a little bit about the early days when you were married to Agnes? Where did you live?
We lived in Stettler, Alberta, which is about 150 miles, I guess, southeast of Athabasca.
And you were working as a welder at this time?
Yes, I was just a welder. I had my own rig, welding small pipelines, oil fields on the rigs, and within 6 months, I was driving, I bought myself in 1953 a brand new car, Bel Air Chev, and I paid $3,030, and it was top of the line. And I earned it within 6 months. I was getting $3 an hour with my rig, which was very good wages at that time.
And how many children did you have with Agnes?
I've had three. I had Wesley. He was born in 57. Kevin was born in 1959. And Laurel, my daughter, was born in 1963.
And were you able to make a good living with your welding in those early days?
Yes, I did. It was pretty good. It was very busy those days in Stettler. It was a brand new oil field which started in about 1948, 49. And there was about 26 drilling rigs. They all came from the United States. And it was all kinds of work for the workers in the oil fields.
Do you have any other stories you'd like to share with your childhood in Athabasca? Did you have a fishing experience?
Yes. Before I went to Stettler, I was looking for a welding job. So my neighbor and I decided to go to Fort Saskatchewan, as there was a boom with the oil fields, plants were being built, etc. So we couldn't get a job, so we decided to go back, catch a bus from Edmonton to Athabasca. And on the bus, we met this guy. He says, if you guys are looking for a job, I'll give you a job fishing on Great Slave Lake. Well, I said, I'm looking for a welding job. And he said, well, you might get a welding job, but if you don't get a welding job, I'll give you a job for both of you fishing, and I'll pay you $150 a month and pay your fare there and back. So we said, okay. We went to Hay River. That's where the plants were for fishing plants. And I couldn't get a welding job, so we went fishing on Great Slave Lake. We took a plane from Hay River and landed up a place called Grow Cap, and that's where all the bunkhouses were. They pull them in for the winter. Pull them in for the summer, so they don't use them in the summertime. They only use them in the wintertime. And these bunkhouses are pulled with a bombardier on the ice, and they're about 12 by 14 feet. And that's where we were fishing for 3 months.
So you lived in these bunkhouses?
Yes, for 3 months.
And how did you live? Where did you get your food? What did you eat?
The food, every week they would send a bombardier and bring us food. And this one time, they couldn't bring us food because there's a huge storm, and it lasted for about a week. So we ended up, we ran out of fuel as we had three dogs to get firewood for us with a toboggan, but we couldn't because you couldn't, it was a total wipeout. So it got so bad that we had to burn some of our furniture in order to stay warm, and we ate strictly fish. We had enough firewood to fry our fish. And this lasted for about almost a week. And then the bombardier came when everything was cleared up and brought us food, which made us quite happy.
Can you describe how you would catch fish? What was the process?
Yes, we would make a hole in the ice with a picaroon, they called it, and put a jigger in the ice. It's a board about 6 feet long and 18 inches wide and about 2 inches thick, and tie a rope to the end of it. As you pulled it and let go of the rope, it would move 2-3 feet at a time till we got 100 yards into the water. Then we find the picker, as you can hear the knock on the picker, and it's also painted yellow, you could see it, and dig a hole and pull this jigger out and pull the net in, as there was a rope tied behind the jigger to pull the net in. And this went on up to 30 nets to continuation every 100 yards.
And how much fish would you catch in a net or in a day?
We pulled 10 nets a day, and some of the nets had up to 100 whitefish, but the average would be about 40, 50 fish to a net.
Was it generally whitefish you caught, or were there other fish?
Mostly whitefish. You would get the odd trout and the odd jackfish, but the jackfish was of no value. We would throw it back in the water and so on.
So when you would pull the fish out, what was the process to store the fish?
Our boss got 6 cents a pound for frozen fish and 10 cents a pound for fresh fish. Now, in order to have fresh fish, soon as you pull the fish out of the net, you had to cover it up with snow. And it would not freeze. It's not frozen, but you can still bend it. That was fresh fish, and it was shipped to the packing plant in Hay River. And after it was packed with ice in the box and shipped to various cities in the United States, mostly New York.
So did they pick up the fish once a month, once a week?
They'd pick up the fish every time they bought us groceries and food. That would be once a week.
Do you remember the type of food that they supplied you? Do you remember what you ate?
No, we had eggs, we had bacon, no question, it was good.
And you mentioned you had dogs?
Yes, we had three dogs, and they were huskies, and they 30, 40, 50, 60 minus sometime, the dogs would be outside, and they survived by not eating fresh fish, because if they ate fresh fish, they would gobble the food, and they would eventually freeze to death. So we had to give them frozen fish, and they chew it, keep chewing it so fine that's how they survive in the wintertime.
Were there other cabins on Great Slave Lake besides yours?
Yes, there was about 150 cabins all around the lake. It's a huge lake. So a lot of these fishermen were from Saskatchewan and other provinces. And they were about 3-4 miles apart.
What types of things did you do in the evening to pass the time when you were fishing?
Well, we would play cards, and the days were very short. And this one Sunday, it was a beautiful day, about 20 minus, but the skies were clear. We decided to visit one of the fishermen. We could see his cabin. It was about 3 miles away. So we walked with our dogs and introduced ourselves, and we had a beer there, and decided to play cards. And we played cards till it got pitch dark, which was about 8, 9 o'clock in the evening, and decided to head back. But as we were going back, we knew that we are lost because we can't find our cabin. We made a mistake. We should have left a light in our cabin, but we did not do that. So we walked all night till 3 o'clock in the morning. I saw a flickering light, and I said to my boss, I think I see something. We better head out towards that light. And he said, I think your eyes are playing tricks on you. Well, I said, I'm not going to sleep on the ice here the rest of the night. Let's head out there. So we took about an hour to get there. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning. Sure enough, it was a cabin. And we knocked on their door, and they let us in. They knew that we were hungry and tired. They made us bacon and eggs. And we had a very good meal and decided to go back to our cabin. We weren't that far away. It was only about 2 miles away. When you get lost in a wipeout, it wasn't really a wipeout, but when you're lost, you walk in circles. And that's exactly what we did. Well, our boss was a bit of a drunk. He used to go to Yellowknife, and we wouldn't see him for a whole week. And he would sell the fish to other companies and get cash and blow it in Yellowknife and come back with no money. So after 3 months, we had no money. So we decided to quit, my neighbor and I. And so the fishing company confiscated the nets and everything else and went back to Hay River. I had to work 6 weeks in a fish factory in order to get my fare back and pay my other expenses, the clothes that I had to get to go on the ice.
Do you have a story about trying to get your pilot's license that you'd like to share?
Yes. In 1959, in January, a flying instructor came from Saskatchewan and signed up 29 students, including myself, to take a flying course. So the first 8-10 hours, he was training us, and he's the pilot, and we're the students beside him. It was the plane that I was learning to fly was a Cessna 140, a two-passenger plane. And after about 12, 15 hours, we are on our own. So February the 17th, how can I forget what I went through? My flying time was 10:30 in the morning. But there was a storm coming. The pilot said, when it gets worse, come right back. The plane was on skis, and the airport, the landing, was in a field east of Stettler. When I took off, the storm got worse. It was a total wipeout. I tried to climb above the storm, but climbing too fast, the plane stalled. And I tried several times, and this one time the plane dropped about 1,500 feet. I pulled on the steering stick, but the sudden lift, I never let go of the stick. I actually passed out. The plane was upside down. I didn't know at the time. When I came to, the plane was heading in the trees. I woke up and made a landing in a farmer's yard. I asked him to drive me to Stettler. It was a miracle that I survived, as a lot of people think that when you stall a plane, it's the motor that stalls. A stall is when it's a steep climb, and the plane can no longer pull the plane, so it starts to fall because it's heavy in the front. And you can't do anything about it till it drops about 1,500 feet. And when I did that several times, I panicked, pulled on the stick, almost hit the ground, and never let go of the stick. And it went upside down, and I have no idea how long I was flying upside down. But leaving at 11:30 and coming back to the yard at 2:30, I think I was upside down maybe 45 minutes, and a Cessna 140 will roll back on its own. I'm not really a religious man, but I believe in the Almighty. I don't think I was flying that plane. Somebody else was flying it.
How many brothers and sisters did you have in your family?
I had three brothers and three sisters. Right to this day, I only have one brother that's still alive. His name is Harry, and he lives in Athabasca.
Do you remember some early childhood stories with your brothers or your sisters?
Well, when we finished school, when I was about 8, 9 years old, 10 years old, after school we'd help with the farm. We'd go chop the trees to make more land for farming. We'd go and pick rocks. We had to work after school for a couple of 3 hours practically every day. Well, we got along very well. We had no problems. I was the youngest brother, or the youngest boy. I had a younger sister, Mary. And we all got along. We had our usual fights at times, but everything was fine.
Did you all go to school together in the morning? Would you all walk to and from school?
Yes, we all did. We walked to school every morning till we were 15 years old. And the only one that went to high school was Mary. She moved to Athabasca and she finished grade 12.
Do you have a story with John about
going to
school or missing school?
Well, yes. When John was about 7, 8, maybe 10 years old, we went to visit our neighbor, and they weren't home. So John saw a watch hanging in the living room. The door was open, and he grabbed that watch, and he took it, but he didn't take it home. He hid it fairly close to that house. And, of course, the neighbor came in few hours later, and he said, I got a watch that's missing. So he measured our feet to see, as he had some evidence about the few steps that he measured. He measured my feet. I wasn't the culprit. He measured John's feet, and he says, it's John. So he took John to his place, and sure enough, John gave the watch back.
Did your family go attend church on Sundays?
Yes, we had what they call Sunday school days. Every Sunday, there would be preachers coming in from different towns and so on, and they would even stay with the neighbors and have evening prayers, etc. My mother was very religious. My father was religious, but not quite as religious as my mother was.
Do you remember growing up in Athabasca or Larvard, some of the community events that you would participate in, like dances or baseball tournaments, or did you go to the neighbor's house for special events?
Well, we used to visit our neighbors and play baseball on whenever we could. We had our own team. We'd play against other teams, and fishing on Sundays, and in the wintertime, we'd go hunting during the war, hunting squirrels, rabbits, that skin them and sell the fur to a fur buyer, and that was little extra dollars that we made especially during the winter months.
So when you were hunting the squirrels and the rabbits, do you remember how much you got paid for the furs?
Yes, I remember my brother Tom. He shot 104 rabbits one day, and we got the rabbits were skinned. We got 7 cents a pelt, but if they weren't skinned, we got 1.5 cents. And the meat and the rabbits would be sent for the soldiers during wartime. And the squirrels, we got 25 cents. But in January, when it was scarce, we'd get up to $1 a pelt.
Did you play any musical instruments growing up?
Yes. When I was 12 years old, my brother bought a guitar, and I picked up the guitar quite well. And when I turned 14, our neighbors had a band, and I used to play for dances with them, playing the guitar, and made $2 a night.
Did anyone else in your family play musical instruments?
Yes, my brother John picked up the guitar quite well, but he just entertained himself and us, of course. And I got pretty good at it, and I still play the guitar at my age.
Did Tom play the guitar, your brother?
Tom played a fiddle, but he was okay. He wasn't a master at it, but he played a few tunes.
Do you have any stories about your father growing up, or do you remember some of the stories he told you about his life?
Well, he was a soldier in the Russian army for about 8 years, and he told us a lot of story. He was an escape artist. He would always escape from a jail because he didn't like the war. And they would catch up with him, put him back in jail, but he seemed to always escape. And his favorite country was Belgium.
When you talk about jail, you mean prison camps in the war?
Prison camps, for the soldiers. And this one time, he told us a story. It was pouring rain, and one of the soldiers hid at a cemetery that was like a little house over this burial. And he moved in there to get from the rain. And another soldier came and he sat right in the doorway. And he lit a cigarette. And this guy, he said, "Uncle," because he wanted to smoke too. And guess what? He pooped his pants because he got so scared. He thought it was a ghost in that little hut.
And what was your first language growing up?
It was Ukrainian, but I learned to write Russian print. My father taught me, and I can still remember to this day some of the words, which it's okay to know languages. When my father turned 65, he decided to retire. He bought a home in Athabasca, and he gave me the farm by being the youngest son out of the four. He says, "You can have the farm." But the family farm, about 5 years later, I sold it to my brother Harry. And the reason I sold it to him, the oldest brother, Tom, had already 2/4 of land. Harry had 1/4, but he only had 80 acres. The rest of his land was in the riverbank, so he could only farm 80 acres. And John had a 1/4 section. He farmed 160 acres. So I thought Harry had the least land, so I sold him the farm. Very reasonable. And I said, "You can have it, and I'm going to stay with my contracting business, and God bless you."
And why did you get the farm when you were the youngest boy?
The reason I got the farm, because I was the youngest, and I had no land. My other three brothers already had land. So my father thought I should have this land. But I didn't stay on it. I headed to Stettler, Alberta with my welding outfit. My mother kept saying, "There is nothing for you on this farm. You have a career as a welder. Maybe you should do something else." And I took her advice. My father loaned me $1,200 to put a down payment on a pickup truck. And I loaded my equipment, welding equipment, on the truck, and I headed to Stettler, Alberta. Then I've welded there for about 15 years before I started my own company. And that was 1965. But I had only $4,000, and I made a loan from the Royal Bank for $10,000. I couldn't get any more. But this was not enough to really do to be a contractor and lay bigger jobs. So about 3-4 years later, the CIBC opened in Stettler, and the manager came over on Saturday morning with a bottle of whiskey, and he says, "I want your business." I said, "Well, that's just wonderful. I can use more money." So after we finished a bottle of whiskey, he said, "You're good for $40,000. That's when we really started to grow. And bigger jobs and bigger jobs every year. And finally, we ended up with about 250 pieces of equipment, which includes the trucks. And the company is still going.